Thanks, Gail. Last winter, we received a letter from a man from near Charlottesville area who's an author, and he offered to come and do a presentation, share his book with us. And so I've gone on the website, and I was intrigued by Paul McKinley, who's here today to talk to us. He is the author of Rules the Spirit, and then there's a second part that I can't read.
Integrating Spiritual Truths in Daily Living.
There you go. Integrating Spiritual Truths in Daily Living. He has been with the Unity of Charlottesville for a short time, but was also a member of the Unity in Temple, Arizona. So we are, Texas. Temple.
Yeah.
We are excited to hear your message today. We welcome you and thank you so very much for coming to join us.
I'm so glad to be here. It was good seeing the kids in worship service. Oh, microphone.
Watch out for the flame behind you.
Get up for the flame behind me. We don't want my backside toasted. It was good to see the kids in worship service. Show me a church that doesn't have kids in it, and I'll show you a church that's maybe not doing so well. So it's always good, especially in the smaller congregations, to see the children in the church. So I always start my messages off with, I consider my job as a speaker to mess with your mind. One of my mentors, Raymond Aron, teaches to have three goals. So instead of having one goal, and either you make the goal or you don't, so it's pass or fail, he says do three goals. So that you have an easy and a challenging and a knock it out of the park goal. So my easy goal is to wake you up. And I have kind of a booming voice, so that's pretty easy. I think I've probably done that already. The next goal is to make you think. My knock it out of the park goal is to change the way you think. That's messing with your mind. Wanted to give a little introduction about Ann and I and how we came to be part of Unity. I'll be referring to that later in the message. Ann was raised a Baptist, and I was kind of sort of raised a Presbyterian, and but ended up going back to what actually my parents' roots were, which is Methodism. So Ann and I met through, she got to a point where the Baptist way of thinking wasn't doing it for her, so she started searching for a new church home and happened upon the church where I was a member in the singles group, and I jumped on her like a duck on a June bug. But we found eventually that our beliefs, the things that we understood about our own spirituality, did not correspond real well with Methodism. So we were having to kind of hold it in. You know, we enjoyed the community. We had lots of good friends and so forth that we loved dearly. But we were, the things that we believed, they found challenging and scary. So, but we didn't know of anything better at the time, so we were just kind of, well, you know, this is the best that we can hope for. Until one day we went to a viewing of the movie The People versus the State of Illusion by Austin Vickers, that was being shown at Unity of the Hills, Unity Church of the Hills in Austin, Texas. We were living in Temple Belton area of Texas at the time. So it was about an hour drive away. So we went down to see this movie, and we go into the church, and there's like, you know, posters about people that are doing Reiki. I'm a Reiki practitioner. And it's like, that's one of the things I couldn't talk about in the Methodist church because they don't believe in that kind of thing. So it's like, well, they got Reiki. They got all of these different things that are going on in the church, and I'm thinking, wow, I wonder if there's one of these in Temple. Mind you, Temple is the buckle of the Bible Belt. So there is a lot of fundamentalist mindset people in Temple. So, you know, Ann's thinking, yeah, sure, you know, no, there's not going to be one in Temple. So we go back home, and I looked it up on the web. Sure enough, there's Unity of Temple. And we started going to Unity of Temple and never looked back. So I think our, well, I guess Ann had to go back because she was one of the counters. So there were one or two Sundays when she still had to go back to the old church. But basically, once we had discovered Unity, that was where we were going to be from then on. And we find that the Unity mind share has a lot better congruence with the things that we understand about our own spirituality. So for all of the right brain people, do you all understand right brain and left brain? So right brain people are artistic and kind of free thinking, and or not thinking, but you know, they're more emotionally based and so forth, and left brain people are very logical and so forth. Ann and I are both engineers, so we're both left brain. And unfortunately, a lot of the message today is going to be kind of left brain. So if you're right brain, I apologize. Hopefully you can follow along with this. My hope is that the message will give you much encouragement and a positive outlook on where this church community has the potential to go. So a number of years ago, during a difficult time in my life, I was introduced to Scott Peck, The Road Less Traveled. I'm sure a lot of you have heard about that book. It was very beneficial to me at the time. And there's a couple other follow-on books to that book. One of them is Further Along the Road Less Traveled. And then there's another one that's The Road Less Traveled and Beyond. And this was M. Scott Peck, MD. He was a psychiatrist. And he did some, study of spirituality from a psychiatrist's point of view. And in this particular book, Further Along the Road Less Traveled, he laid out a paradigm for stages of spiritual growth. He based his model on a model that was presented by, I think it was James Fowler, who is a theologian at one of the seminaries in Texas. Fowler's Stages of Spiritual Growth book is one of those books that they kind of torture you with when you're going to college. I've read the book, and it was one of those that you read a couple pages and then fall asleep. It's pretty deep and pretty dry, pretty challenging to understand. But the Dr. Peck took this model and boiled it down into something that's easy to understand, and I found it to be very helpful. So I thought I would describe that model to you. There's four stages. The first stage is chaotic. Dr. Peck says that about 20% of the population are chaotic. So you know a chaotic person by they don't really have a connection to spirit. Pretty much everything that they do is kind of focused on themselves. They are often either overtly or covertly manipulative of other people. So they're really just kind of, you know, trying to grab it for themselves and not really thinking about the consequences of what they're doing. And so their lifestyle tends to be a bit chaotic. That's why we call it chaotic. And at some point, of course, the chaotic lifestyle gets to be a little bit challenging. You know, when you keep finding yourself in jail or keep finding yourself with destroyed relationships and those types of things, it can be kind of painful. So they, at some point, will tend to move into the next stage, which is institutional. Now, you know an institutional because for an institutional, everything is black and white. Fundamentalists are very strong institutionals. There's no gray area. It's either, you know, right or wrong, good or bad. It's all very cut and dried, very, very one way or the other. And keep in mind that for an institutional, their black and whiteness is what protects them from the chaos. So that black and whiteness, that everything is very cut and dried mindset, from their point of view, that's what protects them from the chaotic lifestyle that was too painful. So, and I would say about two-thirds of the population, 60% or thereabouts, are stage two and never grow beyond that in their life. So about two-thirds of the population are stage two and they stay there all their life. But for some of us, the black and whiteness gets to not work. As we in Unity understand, God didn't create the world in black and white. He created it in super technicolor, except for people like me that are colorblind. So I'm not quite so technicolor for me. But from the symbolic and spiritual aspect, it isn't just shades of gray. There's just wonderful colors in the world, wonderful differences and nuances to the world. So the black and whiteness gets to be uncomfortable and restrictive, and a person graduates into stage three, which is called questioning, or at least I call it questioning. I think, what was it? I can't remember what Dr. Peck called it. I call it questioning. A lot of scientists are questioning. An interesting aspect to me is that your people that align with agnosticism or atheism, and you might think that they're not spiritual, the reality is that they are stage three. It's not that they are not spiritual, it's that they are at that questioning stage where the cut and dried stuff doesn't work for them, and so they're really, you know, they kind of latch on to, well, I just don't believe it, or I'm not sure what to believe, that kind of thing. So when you're confronted with someone who's an agnostic or atheist, don't think of them as being not spiritual. It's just, that's one of the stages. That's one of the aspects of one of the stages. And then at some point, a very few people, I'd say maybe 1% of the population, move into stage four, which I call integrated. Dr. Peck calls it mystic. So stage four people are people who have become comfortable with the mystic aspect of spirituality. There's just things that we're not ever going to understand about our spiritual nature. There's things that we're not ever going to understand about our connection with God and spirit. And the mystic has become comfortable with that, and they're kind of integrated and not as much in the questioning aspect as they used to be. That was one of the things that was kind of refreshing for me and for Ann and I when we discovered Unity, was that when we went to Unity of Temple, which is a church that's about this size, about the same number of members, about the same number of people in service on Sunday morning. And there were several people who I consider to be stage four in that congregation. So that was kind of encouraging. So in terms of numbers, Dr. Peck said that the stage one is about 20%. By my estimation, group two is our stage two, the institutionals are about 60% of the population. Group three is about 20%, and group four is about 1%. I know those numbers don't work out exactly, but you get the idea. A fascination for me about this model is I don't believe that there's only four stages. That doesn't make sense to me. So what does a stage five look like? What does a stage six look like? What stage was Jesus or Buddha or the Dalai Lama or Charles and Myrtle Fillmore? You know, what stage were they at? I also kind of question, as a, I consider myself to be kind of early stage four, would I or any one of us be able to recognize someone who's a stage five? Oh, I forgot to mention, there's a little dynamic between the stages. Remember that for an institutional, the stage one looks like the chaos that they're trying to protect themselves against. But the stage three questioning also, for a stage two, looks like a chaotic, because the stage three questioning is it's not all cut and dried for them. In fact, they reject this cut and driedness. So from a stage two perspective, a stage three looks just the same as a stage one. And for a stage three, the stage two is kind of what they're trying to move away from, because they don't see that everything's all black and white. They see that there's colors and so forth. So there's this kind of oil and water aspect to the different stages. They tend to not mix very well. In this book, as Dr. Peck is describing the four stages, he mentions that there's another speaker, Paul Vitz, who's the leading authority on integration of psychology and religion, said what Scott Peck calls stage four, is just the beginning. So think about that. Now the model is interesting from the point of view of who would be receptive to the unity message. Now, one of the things that you hear a lot in unity is many paths, one God. So what do you think a stage two would think about that? There's not very black and white about that. So I think a stage two person is a institutional would freak out about the unity way of thinking about things. And maybe the early on stage three might not respond to it as well, because they're kind of too busy rejecting the whole spirituality thing. So as a person moves a little bit later into the stage three, I believe that's where they become a little more receptive to the unity message. So let's look at that. If stage three is about 20% of the population, and we're really kind of talking late stage three, or the people that we really believe would be responsive to the unity message, I looked up the population numbers for what's called the Winchester Metropolitan Statistical Area, which is basically the population of the area surrounding Winchester, and it said that it was about 120,000. That's a pretty similar size community to the Temple Belton area where Ann and I came from. We just moved from there last year. So if even though it was 120,000, I'm going to round it off to 100,000. It makes the numbers a little easier to work with. So if our population in the local area is 100,000, this is kind of your target population. And 20% of that is stage three. So that would mean about 20,000 people are stage three. And if we're only looking at about the later half of the 23, that whittles it down to about 10,000. So we're talking in terms of people who might be receptive to the unity message. You have potentially a target of about 10,000 people. So one of the wonderful things about numbers is that you can make them say whatever you want to. So even though it would seem the numbers can't be too far off, so the end story is that we have prospects of having numbers closer to several hundred than several dozen. So my guess is that out of the 10,000 that would be receptive to the message, probably a lot of those people are already plugged into something else and they don't want to move. But I think it boils down to that out of that 10,000, if 1 in 10 were receptive to a move and especially resonated with the unity message, still that's 1,000 people in this local area that are your target audience. OK, Can you imagine this church being several hundred people in the congregation rather than a few dozen? Because if your target audience, I mean, if the people that would be receptive to the idea are about 1,000 people in this local area, people that are close enough that they could, you know, reasonably drive to this location, it's 1,000 people. It's the pond that you're fishing in has 1,000 fish in it. And the question is just of how do you go about reaching out to those people? Make sure I don't catch myself on fire here. So I'm not much of an evangelist, or I don't consider myself to be an evangelist. But the fact of the matter is that if you look at Ann's and my story, we were in a Methodist church, which, I mean, if you think of the spectrum of churches, Methodism is kind of on the more understanding and accepting end of things. And yet we felt like we were in the desert. We had community there, but we couldn't be authentic and real with the community that we had because the beliefs that we had were too challenging for them. So there was a need for us to be in the unity movement. I talked about having the kids in service. I really envy the kids that are in the unity church because I think, you know, wow, how different would my life have been if I had grown up in the Unity Church? It would have been just so vastly different for me, and you know, how much farther along would I have been if I had grown up in the Unity Church? So this church needs the people that are in the community that would be receptive to the message. But the people that are in the community need this church. It's important for the church to reach these people as best you can, because they need, it's not just that the church needs them, but they need the church. So that's very important, that the church do the best that you can to reach out to that community. Matthew 5:15 says, nobody lights a light and keeps it under a basket. So rather than being the best kept secret in the Winchester MSA, it's a good idea to figure out ways to reach out to those people and get yourself in front of them so that they know that you're there. I mean, Ann and I would have joined Unity a long time ago, but we never knew that they were there. That was some of the work that I did with them when we were at that church, was to try to use things like Facebook and anything that we could think of to get the word out. So I would encourage each of you to think about ways to, what can we do, what can this church do as a outreach to the people in the local community, just so that you get the word out that, you know, hey, we're here, we're Unity, this is what Unity is all about, and then the people that would respond to that message would be attracted to this church, and you get this thing going on, as I say, of that the church needs them and they need the church, so you have the synergism that comes to that. So in terms of thinking about how you can reach out to the community, I brought some index cards with me today that we're going to hand out, and during the meditation, or whenever it's convenient for you, think about just three things that this church can do to reach out to the community and get it out there that this church exists, what it's about, so that you can have the people that would respond to the Unity message come in and start finding community here. So when you write your ideas down on the card, and as we pass the offering plate a little bit later, just put the card in with the offering plate. As we put energy into ministering to people who would find value in what Unity has to offer, as we begin attracting them, we will become a stronger community better able to fulfill the mission statement for this church. Thank you. As we go into meditation, I invite you to think about and pray about all of the people, the 1,000 people that are out there just waiting to find out about Unity of the Shenandoah and what it can do for them in their spiritual lives. Word, either thought, spoken, or acted out as a prayer. Picture in your mind all of the living, laughing, loving people just waiting in the wings, needing a place like this, needing a community like this to fill that empty spot in their lives.